your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday night, August 31st, 2025, as we record this new show. For many of you, you are listening to this on Monday, September 1st, which is Labor Day. I hope you all have the day off and getting to enjoy what has been excellent weather in the Chicagoland area these past few days. Speaking of working, the White Sox are still at work as they continue on their 17 straight days of playing game stretch. They salvaged one win against the New York Yankees on Sunday, winning 3-2 thanks to late home runs from Colson Montgomery and Lenin Sosa. The White Sox are now 49-88 on the season. In this episode, we'll talk about the roster expansions and who could be joining the White Sox. We do have some news on that front, as Jim Margulis was reporting on the Charlotte Knights this weekend. There's an excellent fan question about what the 2026 starting pitching rotation will look like. And we'll take a look around Major League Baseball at the end of the show. We're also joined by our best friend of the podcast, Dan Zaborski of Fangraphs.com, will join me momentarily. But first, some Sox Machine news. In case you don't follow us on social media, because you don't participate in social media, we are hosting two events in 2026. First, our annual road trip will be in Detroit during Father's Day weekend from June 19th through the 21st. We are already hard at work in getting a pregame spot finalized. Our plan is to have a pregame party with a buffet and a drink package prior to the Saturday, June 20th game. So mark your calendars for that weekend. But we are also asking all of our Sox Machine supporters to join us in Chicago next summer as we host a meetup on Friday, August 7th and Saturday, August 8th for the White Sox versus Guardians series. We'll be having a pregame party at the Remova Theater in their beer garden on Friday, August 7th. And then on August 8th, we are teaming up with our friends, the Chicago Sports Bums, as they are the tailgate experts. They'll help us host a pregame tailgate party for Saturday, August 8th. Both Detroit and Chicago events, we are working with Marriott to hopefully secure a block of hotel rooms to help you with booking not only lodging, but also save a little money. If you are interested or have already booked your time off for these events, we do have an interest form that will be available in this podcast post and later on Monday night on SoxMachine.com. If you can fill that out, it'll help gauge on how big of a block of hotel rooms we need and what our projected crowd sizes will be for Detroit and Chicago. Meanwhile, we'll have what I call Sox Machine side quests in 2026. For our West Coast friends, I'm making my way to San Diego for the May 1st through the 3rd series, and then driving up to Anaheim for the May 4th through the 6th series. There's also the opening day series in Milwaukee, that's late March. And in September, we are hoping to find a gathering spot for the St. Louis Cardinals series. So if you can't make it to Detroit or Chicago, but those other locations work for you, again, fill out the interest form so we can stay in touch. On Saturday, September 6th, Sox Machine and Baseball Isn't Boring are hosting a live podcast at the Remova Theater. Doors open at 4 p.m. Central Time as I'll be hosting the live pregame show, along with Courtney Finicum, chatting about this offensive surge from the White Sox, what was our favorite things about the 2025 season, and what the White Sox need to do this upcoming offseason to be more competitive in 2026. After the pregame show, we'll be hosting a live watch party of the White Sox vs. Detroit Tigers game. Watch along with us while enjoying the wonderful new food menu from the Remova Grill. And don't forget about the new beer from the Remova Brewery, including Gene Honda's new brew. The show and watch party is a free event. You can RSVP either on SoxMachine.com or RemovaChicago.com. We can't wait to see everyone at the Remova Theater on Saturday, September 6th. We've gotten a lot of questions over the last few weeks, especially with the Chicago White Sox top prospects joining the team and at times performing really well. Does this change the future outlook for the Chicago White Sox, especially with the projection systems? And how do you project the White Sox for the 2026 season and beyond from what we have seen in the 2025 season? Well, joining us is our best friend of the show, from Fangraphs.com and the founder and the gatekeeper of the Zips projection system, the man that you know to hate on if you do not like what Zips has to say about your favorite team and players, it's Dan Zaborski. Hello, Dan. Welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Josh. How's it going? I thought you were going to say the man you know and love, and I was going to have to correct you. Like, I don't know there's that much love from anyone, but yeah, that's accurate. I kind of get the blame when Zips goes wrong, and Zips gets the credit when things go right. So I think there's a kind of an asymmetric emotional relationship going on.
Yes.
It's slightly abusive, I think.
So, Dan, that's a good place to start. Are the White Sox making enough progress in 2025 for you to be able to, I don't want to say with accuracy, but consider them a fringe contender sooner than later?
Fringe contender, that's a pretty aggressive, because I guess it depends on what you define by fringe contender. I think that you need to kind of have a team like project to around 75 wins to really be a fringe contender. Because if you say 70, then that's like pretty much everyone is a fringe contender, and then you've kind of watered it down. I just think the team has too many holes generally. There are bright spots on the team, for sure. Miguel Vargas has been decent. He hasn't been great yet, but I think Chase Meidroff is going to be fine in the end. The catching situation has been pretty solid. There are things to like, and of course Shane Smith, who's also probably their best long-term pitcher that's in the majors right now. So there are good things, but I think there's still enough really lousy things that I don't think I'd put there unless they had an aggressive offseason and did something crazy. But I don't think they're actually going to. Maybe I'm wrong.
What is the biggest, lousiest thing about the White Sox that, in your opinion, has to be addressed?
I think, I mean, you need a better corner outfield DH first base situation. Figure that out somehow. There's just so much sorting out to do at this point. You need more depth in the rotation. The back of the bullpen especially. If we just sit here and list the holes, it'll just sound almost cruel, I think. But there are bright spots on the team. It isn't just a completely bleak landscape. There are green shoots, we'll say, to steal the old term from, what was it? Was that Bush in 2004, or was that Obama who said green shoots for the recovery from a recession? It was either like the 2001 recession or the 2008 one, and someone said the green shoots. It sounds more like a Bush thing than an Obama thing. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure that everyone who heard this now hates me since I mentioned politics, which I try never to do because I hate myself a little when that happens. So I submit to your anger and sadness and daggers.
Well, one of the biggest offseason decisions the White Sox may have already made, and that really depends on if you trust Chris Getz at his word, that the White Sox are going to bring back Luis Robert for the 2026 season and pick up that $20 million club option. This has been a source of debate for a while, Dan. And when it came to fruition that Luis Robert would not be traded by the Chicago White Sox and will stay with the White Sox, and Getz paints this picture that they expect Robert to be with the White Sox for 2026 opening day, what do you make of this situation with Luis Robert? And from what you have seen in 2025, is this the right move by the White Sox to keep Robert and pay him $20 million?
I would probably say no. I think they're still optimistic about him, and I can understand why they didn't trade him. I think the impression I get is that the offers for, like, just the buzz, I don't have any specific offer that I'm familiar with, but that the offers were not considered even remotely plausible from the White Sox belief. I don't think he's really valued around baseball all that highly. I think that if they didn't pick up the option, you could probably bring him back considerably cheaper and still be the high bidder. I don't think there's a Robert market out there right now. I think it's just been, 2 years since he had that moment. And I think that a lot of teams look at him the same way they did Tim Anderson kind of at the end. Like, yeah, call us in 2022 and we'd be happy to make a trade.
If you don't think there's much of a Robert market, because in our previous podcast episode, Jim Margulis mentioned Michael Conforto got $17 million from the Los Angeles Dodgers. If Robert
Sure.
was a free agent, could he get that type of 1 year pillow type of contract? Or do you think that the league views Robert even at a lesser value than a Conforto?
He might, but I think the Dodgers probably realized they were overpaying.
Okay.
And I think they probably regret it too, because I don't know. The Dodgers seem to have this ability to take any random player and somehow make them crazy good for like 3 months. But Conforto has been pretty lousy. He's been a big bomb in LA. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and there is that bidder out there. Maybe the Rockies would offer him $200 million or something.
Wow.
Probably not. That's probably a little unrealistic. But I like to make Rockies jokes. But I don't know. I mean, I don't mind him getting money. I think I don't know if the White Sox necessarily have much better they can do with it. I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, it does. He is kind of a part, like basically the last piece of when the White Sox were good. That's hard to let that go.
And then there's the whole question of even if you did not pick up Robert's option, you pay him $2 million and you don't bring him back, what do you do with the other 18 million? I think that would be a pretty popular question for everyone that covers the White Sox this offseason. So again, probably why the White Sox are just going to pick up Robert's option because they don't have a better plan B right now for center field. I am curious to know, and this has been pretty popular in the comments section on Sox Machine, what Zips is making of the young players for the Chicago White Sox. So I want to start with Colson Montgomery. And Colson has broken my brain a little bit, Dan,
I understand.
because he didn't hit this well in the minor leagues, especially on the power front. He joins the White Sox, he gets a hold of a torpedo bat. And before his side started acting up on him, 14 home runs in a very short time span. If he were able to keep up this trend for the power, especially in the home run front, he would be on a more than 45 home run pace over 162 games, which is very rare to see on the south side of Chicago. So what does Zips make of Colson Montgomery after his first 44, 45 games of his major league career?
Well, Zips is kind of splitting the differences, which is probably isn't unexpected. Zips sees him in a full season as kind of a 20 home run player going forward, but it is a situation where you look at you see that kind of incongruence between the minor league performance and the major league performance. And I've actually looked at this in the past. I think of Chris Singleton as an example of this way back. And since he was a White Sox, that's relevant to this. People tend to be too quick to diminish mediocre minor league performance if the major league performance after it is good. But historically speaking, that's when there's a big difference between major and minor league performance. The minor league performance still retains the same level of predictive value. I think people will try to latch onto a change as this is an improvement rather than just this is different. And a lot of times things are different, but the difference isn't actually all that meaningful. So the projections, at least for Zips, at least I can't speak for Steamer long term because I don't know what his 2026 is. It sees him as a legitimate starting above average starter, has him in a 2.5 win range for
Okay.
2026, which is pretty good. And with good home runs, but a fairly low batting average, around 230 with obviously the resulting fairly low on-base percentage. So it's kind of in the middle on him. But the thing is that the White Sox are in a position they should be that it really shouldn't bother them all that much because the best option, obviously, at short is to play Colson Montgomery there and see what happens. That's one of the luxuries of being a lousy team is you don't really have to agonize over who's the best at any spot. You have to ask yourself who could be the best at any spot in the future and see what you have from them.
No, that's a really good point and a good observation. So on the minor league front, to follow back up on that, is there any particular reason why we should not ignore those trends, especially when we are analyzing a player like Colson Montgomery?
I'm sorry, which trend specifically are you, I mean, from here?
Like, don't disregard the past minor league performance from Colson Montgomery. Because when we talk about Montgomery now, it's like, okay, we could ignore what happened in Charlotte and Birmingham, but you're saying that would be a mistake to do.
Yeah, just from the historical data on that, because I've looked at that in the past because people have asked that before, and there's no change in predictive value based on how much the minors and majors match. They both retained that. So I think that the thing is that things can represent mere improvement, but it could just mean he's playing better. There are lots of players in the majors who have had been really good the last 3 months and really mediocre the 2 months before that. And that doesn't mean that they've suddenly switched. Players had the same volatility and those same things exist, whether or not they've changed levels or not, or whether or not I think it's too easy to fit the data into a storyline where it's more likely the data just isn't, that the splits are just not that relevant.
Got it. Because the fear is what we're seeing from Colson Montgomery now is very fun.
It is. No,
But
fun
is
is
he?
definitely fun, and I don't want to, crap all over him or anything. That's not the purpose, but I think you do have to, be cognizant of the risks.
But is he Gordon Beckham 2.0 is the concern.
I mean, there's always that chance. I think he's better than Gordon Beckham. I don't think he's going to
Okay.
be bended like Beckham. Sorry, that was bad. I deserved some bad things to happen to me for that. But I mean, as I said before, I think from the White Sox position, it doesn't really matter at this point.
Okay.
Because however you feel about Colson Montgomery, it's clear that there's enough uncertainty and enough upside and enough good performance in there that you should play him at shortstop, and he's your starting shortstop in 2026, pretty much no matter what. So all you can really do is see what happens.
The White Sox All-Star in 2025, because somebody had to be Shane Smith. What does Zips make of Shane Smith? Can he be the frontline surprise rotation starter that the White Sox maybe were not expecting when they took him in the Rule 5 draft?
As you know, if you're talking in terms of an ace, Zips isn't there yet, but Zips is at the point where it sees him as a legitimate, good number two starter,
Okay.
and that's a pretty big deal because coming into the season, we didn't know if they had, a legitimate number four starter. So, and he's fun too. I've done some Shane Smith AIs, and when a rookie gets some AIs for me that I'm going to put effort into, that usually means that. And it wasn't even a mean White Sox AI, which I sometimes do.
You do a lot of those.
I do a lot of mean Rockies ones too. I might be a bad person. Who knows?
You're on the Shane Smith bandwagon. You
Yeah.
like what you have seen this year.
Yeah, I really like watching him pitch. And it's funny, watching him early in the season, really the first few starts, it really just shocked me how good he looked at times. I mean I love I love his repertoire. I love that changeup. That 90 mile per hour changeup that looks like it goes slower than that when you're swinging at it. It's he's been very put together and it's very impressive. And I think that if you look at his data, some will say his strikeout rate isn't that good. I actually think from his good contact against rates that his strikeout rate actually has some potential to go up. That it might not be that his strikeout rate is too low. It's that the strikeout rate itself might be misleading and it should be higher. I can see him as, next season being a 9, 9.5 strikeout per nine guy.
Yeah, because Dylan Cease had that same issue,
Yeah.
I recall, when he was first starting with the White Sox. Great stuff, just wasn't striking out anyone. And then it clicked for him. And then he was striking out batters at a very high clip, even going when he joined the San Diego Padres, and maybe not so much in 2025. But we've seen that before, White Sox
Yeah.
fans, from Dylan Cease.
Nate Eovaldi is another guy like that.
Okay, yeah.
He came up with the Marlins, and he was at the time he was one of the hardest throwers in baseball. He was throwing, 96, 97, a little bit higher. He was a significant, I mean, he threw hard and he had so much trouble getting strike three. Much, much more of a problem than Shane Smith had. I mean, he was a guy hitting 97 who was striking out six batters a game in the mid 2010s. And strikeouts have gone up, but not that much where where, but he finally figured out how to get strike three while he was with the Red Sox, and that's been a, I mean, that's really turned him around. I mean, he's injured now, but he was having, a season that, would give Cy Young contendership. So getting strike three is sometimes a difficult task for young pitchers who have good stuff. Obviously, Shane Smith doesn't throw 99 or anything, but he does have a good enough repertoire where you can see him still whiffing guys. He doesn't have that same problem to that degree. A lot of times when these guys do, it's someone who doesn't have a wide enough repertoire of stuff. I think Kevin Gausman, before he really figured out how to use a splitter, like if you're just a fastball slider guy, you have to have that answer for strike three. And that's pretty tricky for a starting pitcher. That's why relievers can survive with fastball slider. But when you're the, starting pitcher and you've faced the lineup two times, that's a lot harder to do. So I'm optimistic about Shane Smith, is to sum up my meandering response.
Moving back over to the position player side, we are recording this prior to the MRI results from Miguel Vargas when Aaron Judge on that bang bang play for the White Sox and Yankees game on Thursday night, August 28th, when Aaron Judge ran through Miguel Vargas's hand and it bent it backwards, and he has a left hand contusion. Didn't know that you needed a contusion on your hand like that. So maybe there'll be more insight, and hopefully it's not a serious injury for Miguel Vargas. But last year, obviously, we tossed that away, Dan, because of just he was physically shell-shocked that he got traded from the team that ended up winning the World Series, and Vargas now has a World Series ring with the Dodgers, to the worst team in recent memory, the 2024 Chicago White Sox. What do you make of Vargas, and what does Zips think of what kind of hitter Miguel Vargas is moving forward?
He was a guy I believe I told people not to get too down on him, that you look and there were a lot of flukiness. A lot of signs of it, of his Chicago performance being a fluke. I might have actually had him on my breakout hitter picks. I'm really hopeful I did. I'm slowly trying to look this up if I did. No, I didn't put him there. I put him back somewhere, maybe bounce backs. But I think it goes into the same thing, that it's too easy to latch on to short-term performance and assume something's changed. I don't think that Vargas in with the White Sox last year is much that different than Montgomery going the opposite direction. You look at his performance and his batting average and balls in play, that wasn't ever going to be a real thing. He had a much longer track record than just the 2 months in Chicago. So I think he's right at his projection. Let me actually look that up. Let's see, preseason projection, Zips. He's actually a little below. 110 WRC plus versus 100 WRC plus. But I think that he's bounced back well and about what you expected. And obviously we don't know what the wrist is, but he's going to have an off season to take care of that. And that hopefully isn't a long-term thing. I've had a similar injury. I hurt my wrist, tripping on a cat about 20 years ago. And I didn't slam my wrist like Judge. I kind of got it caught in the railing of my stairs as I fell clumsily, and I tore. I don't know. It's been 20 years, but I feel his pain.
As far as his defensive position, he's been going back and forth at first base and third base. Do you have a preference on where you would want Vargas to be more at in 2026?
I think you prefer, see, in the short term, you play him at first base because he's probably the most likely option there. I think if you have the roster, you try him at third base until he can conclusively prove that he should not be there. I think
Okay.
there's a chance. I don't think he's good at third base, but I'm not sure he's as bad as, say, second base. I would not put him at second base anymore, and there's no real need in the organization based on their roster to have him at second base. But depending on who you have on the roster, I think you try him at third base. Unless you just simply have too many infielders, I wouldn't prioritize him at third base or have him block anybody at third base. But I think it's sensible because, again, the White Sox, you don't actually tell the fans this, but they're at a place where learning things about their players is far more important than whether any particular game is won or lost.
So you'd be okay if if Chris got said at the winter meetings in December, we're going in with Vargas and Montgomery as our left side of the infield.
I think I'd be fine with that. I don't know how you feel, but.
We were kind of expecting Montgomery to be the opening day shortstop based on what Getz told us in Dallas last
Hey,
winter meetings.
people on teams tell me lots of things. And most of them, whenever someone from a team speaks about something, they have a reason for speaking about it. Or they're drunk, but usually it's the former.
The White Sox catchers, Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro, they've shown offensive promise. They've made some pretty good defensive plays. Boy, we go on Baseball Savant and we look at the catchy numbers, and they're not pretty, but we chalk it up to them being rookies and them learning on the job. What does Zips make of Teal and Caro? And does Zips prefer one over the other defensively at the catcher position?
Zips does prefer Teal overall, but likes Teal a little less defensively. I
Okay.
think it's kind of a tricky. I think you definitely want to make sure that they both get enough time behind the plate so that you can evaluate them long term. I don't think you want to necessarily make your decision. I think when you talk about a year from now, if you have two good young catchers, that gives the White Sox a surplus of something. That is, when you have a surplus of something, you can get something else of value in return. I think that if you get we're late in 2026 and they both seem like above average catchers overall, and you're not sure if Teal is going to be like, a 130 WRC plus hitter if you play him at first base or DH, I think that you do talk about, trading him for, say, a starting pitching prospect or an outfield prospect. Who may not have the same defensive ability to play catcher, but has a big bat and can play the outfield. I don't think you necessarily want to just stick the loser at the another position. At the end of the day, I think you lose value that way. And I think it's one thing if the White Sox were a contender right now, then you say, okay, we have two great catchers and we'll figure it out. But they're in a position where they need to add as much talent as they can whenever there's an opportunity to. So I think you give them a tandem as much time as possible to sort things out, and then you make a decision on who you like more than the others. I think that you look what the Blue Jays did; they had a bunch of catchers, and I think it's worked out well for them that they made that decision. Maybe they shouldn't have picked Alejandro Kirk over Gabriel Moreno, but at some point it was necessary to make that decision to get another player they needed. Gabriel Moreno is a tandem catcher with Alejandro Kirk. Cost him Dalton Varsho, who's been up and down, but has been solid overall, if a bit low on base percentage. There's something to be made for eventually, once you have the information, making a concrete decision.
And the White Sox haven't reached that point yet. They haven't had
No.
enough games of Teal and Caro to make that decision.
I don't think so. I think catchers are weird. Catchers are very strange developmentally. There are so many catching prospects that just stop developing as they go up in the minors. You have a lot of young catchers just disappear. Like you think Petrick and Ben Davis and
Oh,
there's all
yeah.
sorts of guys who are good in the majors for a few years and just disappear. Playing catcher, I mean, it has physical requirements that are different than pretty much any other position. I don't think there's any position that's as different from the others as catchers are. Obviously, playing shortstop is very different than playing first base, but I think they're more similar in type of things that you do physically compared to what a catcher does.
Yeah, because that's been brought up in our conversations offline about who should be the American League MVP, Cal Raleigh or Aaron Judge. And I know a lot of the cases, like Raleigh's got a much tougher defensive position than Aaron Judge. Yeah, Aaron Judge might be beating him in WAR and as far as a lot of offensive stats, except for home runs. But when you consider the other tasks that Cal Raleigh has to do as Seattle's primary catcher, that should give him a nudge over Judge.
Yeah, and the hope, of course, is that our positional adjustments capture this. We have them pretty much neck and neck in WAR. I actually think Raleigh has the edge right now among writers.
Oh, okay.
I think writers like novelty. And Judge has already been crazy good, and Raleigh is just, the most home runs ever by a primary catcher. I mean, he has a legitimate chance to end up, it's below 50%, but he could finish with 60 home runs. And
He's
I think
got
it'll,
that high of a chance of reaching 60.
I mean, he's at 50 right now, and we still have a month to go.
Yeah.
All the projection systems on Fangraphs project 7 home runs right now as the average. So that puts him at
57 home
57.
runs.
A
Wow.
guy you project to hit 7 home runs in a month, hitting 10 home runs in a month, that's not out of the realm of possibility. It's a real thing that can happen. Schwarber could hit 62 after the 4 home runs. The
Right.
tallying 4 home runs was a pretty significant bump in those probabilities. You don't need to have that Sammy Sosa, what was it, 20 home runs in June? I think it
Yes.
was, because that was the MLB The Show program. It was the 20 home run in June program for Sosa, where they made you hit 20 home runs with him.
So you're saying Kyle Teal and Edgar Carr are going to hit 57 homers next year for the White Sox?
Could be. I mean, I mean, Cal Raleigh was someone who people always thought would hit in the majors, but if you go back 5 years and say, in 5 years, Cal Raleigh will hit 60 home runs, people would think you're insane.
Yeah. Well, he's on my fantasy baseball team, and I had no idea he'd be this good
Then of
this year.
course there's a lot of things that if you go back 5 years or 10 or 15 years and say this is the state of the world right now, that people would think you're insane. I
Yeah.
won't go into what those are, but we can all use our imaginations.
Finally, because I think White Sox fans at this moment, with some of the injuries piling up, and knowing that it's going to be tough for them to avoid 100 losses, that there's some part of the fan base that just like to hit the fast forward button and sim the last 28 games of the season. And let's get the offseason started and let's pondering what the White Sox could be doing next. And would they be serious in trying to make some additions before the uncertainty of what's going to be happening after the CBA expires in December of 2026? Let me put you in the spot of Chris Getz, Dan. If Jerry Reinsdorf came up to you, this is your typical podcast question, and told you, Dan Zaborski, I'm going to give you
Wait,
$25 million.
am I Chris Getz or am I Dan Zimborski? Like, am
Let's
I being
make you Chris Getz in this
transported?
situation.
Okay, so I'm Chris Getz. I'm not Dan Zimborski, like impersonating Chris Getz.
Correct.
I don't think he would give me $25 million.
No,
He'd say, "Who the
but.
hell are you? Oh, dear God, I looked at your Twitter account."
I'd be shocked if Jerry Reinsdorf has Twitter. But if you were Chris Getz and Jerry told you you can sign one free agent at $25 million a season, what kind of free agent would you sign? A position player or a pitcher for the White Sox?
And I can only sign one. I can't spread the
Right.
money around.
Yeah,
Oh.
you can only sign one.
I think I would sign a hitter for a few reasons.
Okay.
I'm not sure who yet. I have to actually consider that. But I think if the White Sox pitchers have kind of smaller horizons simply because of the rate that they break down. If I'm signing someone for $25 million a year, I want them to be around for sure in 5 years. And a hitter generally will be. Obviously, there are extreme situations. They fall off the cliff performance-wise, or they have repeated concussion syndrome like Jeff Cirillo and aren't. I mean, there are exceptions, but the $25 million hitter will probably be around in 3 years, more likely than the pitcher. I think pitchers, you really, when you sign a picture to a big deal, you're really looking at like years 1 to 3, getting as much out of that as possible, and just praying that they're around after that.
Right.
So I think that when you sign up a hitter, you can have a longer horizon to look at than a pitcher. So I think I would go with a hitter. I think back to the Padres and Eric Hosmer. Obviously, I did not like that
No,
signing,
you
and
didn't.
weirdly, I had people trying to dunk on me the other day for not liking that signing, like I was wrong about it, which really confuses me. Yeah, I don't understand that either. There's plenty of things I've been wrong about, and certainly it wasn't the Hosmer deal. But the Hosmer deal is better than a deal a, an exact sim, an exact clone of that deal for the Eric Hosmer version of a picture. It's, I mean, I'm glad they didn't get Eric Hosmer the pitcher, and he was Eric Hosmer the first baseman, because there was at least a scenario in which he was good and he'd probably be healthy when the Padres were good. Obviously, that didn't happen, but I think the White Sox should prioritize a hitter if they're going to spend $25 million on one player. I wouldn't spend it on one player. I would go, pillow contract city. I'd make the White Sox the new MyPillow guy. Get guys who are interesting and have upside, and give them guaranteed deals with option years for the White Sox so they can actually cash in on some of them. The Dodgers are a team that does that, because one of the things the Dodgers do very well is they get guys who are interesting in some way, even if they're injured, even if they kind of suck. The Dodgers will look at those players and say, what is the upside here? What is the lottery ticket? Because, tomorrow's lottery ticket is infinitely more valuable than yesterday's lottery ticket that failed. So I would look for upside, and everything the White Sox should do should be about how does this make our team good in 2027 or 2028? And if you can't answer that question, then the White Sox shouldn't do it.
Got it. No, that makes sense to me. Josh Rojas didn't have enough upside for you.
I never understood these, and they didn't really cash in all that well. They got a prospect for Austin, prospect-ish for Austin Slater, and nothing for Rojas. I mean, nothing for Taylor. I mean, Talkman's been fine, but I mean, you're not going to get. I mean, he's arbitration eligible, so he would be back, but they're not going to get a huge prospect for a 35-year-old fourth outfielder. It's just not going to happen. I just they these th those players made so much sense for a lot of other teams, just not the White Sox.
Well, Taylor's came in handy now that Robert may not be returning, so at least the White Sox have a viable center fielder to chase down fly balls, even though I think they're going to get Brooks Baldwin some run in center field
Yeah,
at
I mean, that's
some
the thing.
point.
If it's not Robert, then do you want to have Taylor as your backup? I think that if you didn't have Robert, you'd probably look for a better idea than Taylor. Because again, Taylor's not a young player. He's
No.
going to be 35 next season.
Yeah. It's just that I know some White Sox fans and some at Sox Machine are getting ready for the offseason plan project. I'm imagining I'm going to see a lot of Framber Valdez arguments being made that the White Sox should go after him. I think we're going to see a ton of Kyle Schwarber arguments.
I know Schwarber would be fun.
It would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to spend $25 million and get a guy. There's just only so many guys out there available in free agency. And Schwarber's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And if you're going to lose, there's something to be said for fun. I don't know how happy Schwarber would be to hit 50 home runs and have like 80 RBI as a result, but. The Chris the Chris Hoyles fever dream, for both to age myself and reference a player from the wrong team. For those who don't remember, Chris Hoyles was this catcher for the Orioles in the early 90s. I think he was the compensation pick for, oh God, someone the Mets signed, I forget, but he had they he hit for a lot of power, and they put him like at the bottom of the lineup so much. So he had all these weird seasons. He had a 20 home run, 40 RBI season, a 19 home run, 53 RBI season, which was always weird. Hoyles actually was really, really good. Look him up when you get a chance. That's my weird moment that makes no sense to White Sox fans.
I will do that. And podcast listeners, you can do that as well on fangraphs.com, where you can read Dan's excellent work and you can follow him on social media. He's at D Zaborski on Twitter. You made your way over to Blue Sky.
Yeah, I'm on Blue Sky and Twitter. I'm at D. Zimborski both places.
Got it. So you can follow Dan on Twitter. You can see him on Blue Sky and of course read his excellent work on fangraphs.com. But he is one of our best friends of the show. I'm sorry, the best friend of the show. I didn't want to offend
I
you
don't I
there.
you, I'm very hard to offend.
Again, Dan, thank you so much for coming back on the Sox Machine podcast.
Thanks as always for having me.
Thanks again to Dan Zaborski for joining the podcast. Now I'm joined by Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. To start, we have some breaking news from Nashville. As Jim, you noticed someone wasn't with the Knights dugout on Sunday night, and it appears they are joining the White Sox in Minneapolis.
You just want me to say it. You don't want that clip.
You're the
on
one breaking the news, man. Yeah, be the reporter. No. Own it. Who's joining the White Sox?
You do it.
Yeah. Everybody is excited to know that Mike Clevinger was a late scratch from his start for the Charlotte Knights on Sunday. Unlike Will Robertson, when he was removed from the game for injury purposes and like hung around the dugout, Clevinger was not in the dugout. And yes, I'm told that he's heading up to the White Sox to take one of the expanded roster spots and help pitch, or at least to help contribute some form of innings, whether it's Monday or beyond. Nobody seems thrilled about that, according to the mentions online, but he's, we talked about it. As far as I liked floating that possibility, much to your chagrin, of Clevinger being somebody who could take a start at some point or throw three innings and throw 95 pitches and the White Sox wouldn't really care in terms of worrying about development or injuries, just kind of a, whether they, it's because they hold them in disproportionately high regard relative to the rest of the league, or because they you just need a meat shield out there and just need somebody to take innings and throw pitches when they're playing so many games in a row. Looks like that prophecy has come true.
So James, with Clevinger joining the White Sox, have you heard what could possibly be the game plan for his usage with the White Sox in the final month of the season?
I mean, I asked if he was starting and I was told no. They obviously, and speaking of the things that kind of broke today, let Aaron Civale go on waivers. So they have a rotation opening that they literally need to fill on Monday. Certainly they called up Bryce Wilson and he could be an option. And I know he's been kind of swinging back and forth, yeah, he's been up to, five innings pretty recently, this month. So that obviously worked. But if that were who they were going with, I wouldn't know why they wouldn't have just said he was a probable starter when they called him up. So we're kind of still wondering about this. But I guess he's been one. They've clearly appreciated Clevinger, at least how he has been a employee and under their umbrella for, outside of, performance.
I heard that too, this week in Nashville, just that he's a consummate professional for what that's worth.
And his performance has been like, kind of okay, AAA starter, not someone you can see having like impact on his current form, but you could say like see him covering three innings, or some sort of bulk thing to string the innings together. It's not a particularly inspiring, futuristic look for, a team that's, usually rebuilding, and you kind of hope that the priority is young players, young starters in this, at this point of the year, but they don't necessarily have an obvious kind of stretched out AAA guy. They don't have, you can talk about Peyton Pallett and Zach Franklin, and certainly like, it seems like they are future big leaguers, but it's not like they're just absolutely have clearly dominated and conquered AAA right now, where they demanded a shot right at this moment. And Tanner McDougal probably profiles as like the starter, who's both, Rule 5 eligible this winter and has had an impact and has even stuff quality that would play if you gave him like the, single inning bullpen treatment that Iriarte and, Eater got last year. But how many innings does he truly have left? Is that a too big of a jump to add on somebody that, is kind of at the end of their season and at the end of their stamina a little bit? Like, that wouldn't be a crazy argument either. So it's not like there's a smoking gun obvious case of like, how could they pick this guy, Clevinger, over this guy, but it's obviously not going to be like something that stokes a good feeling of like, all right, this is big time momentum for 2026. Like, no matter what he accomplishes, like he could throw four complete game shutouts, and even then you'd be like, well, what is this going to prompt them to do? So I think probably internally it makes more sense than it can really make or inspire any excitement or sense externally.
Got it. The White Sox on Labor Day on Monday are day 11 in a 17 straight day of games. And it's pretty clear that the White Sox pitching staff, thankfully, Shane Smith and Martin Perez pitched really well for the White Sox on Saturday and Sunday to alleviate some of the pressure and workload for the White Sox bullpen. But they just need arms at this point. And they have seven straight more games. They have four games in Minneapolis, and they head to Detroit after Thursday for that weekend series against the Tigers before they finally get an off day. And after that off day, the White Sox play nine straight days. So it's a lot of games and not many days off. So I can understand what you guys are explaining to me with Clevinger being called up. I guess, Jim, it also goes hand in hand with all these pitching injuries that we saw at spring training and maybe some underperformance. I mean, if Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz lived up to the hype coming into the season, maybe they're the ones that are getting these call-ups and not Mike Clevinger. So maybe it's just a little bit of disappointment from the other arms not getting their shot. But one thing we talked about in the seats over the weekend is Jairo Iriarte not an option for the White Sox, or could he possibly be an option for the White Sox?
He just walked three out of four batters tonight. Some big misses. Yeah, the control isn't there. The stuff is not ticked up. Yeah. When he's in the strike zone, like, he doesn't seem to get shelled. He just has a casual relationship with it at best right now. And the arm isn't electric enough to think like that. That's going to be any better or even the same in terms of mitigating that traffic in the major leagues.
Got it. So really, Clevinger's just going to help the White Sox get through games. It's
not about
development.
And we haven't talked about, you know, Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon either, who are in Charlotte. And, you know, they're not on schedule for this start. Or, you know, and I'm curious, you know, if James hears he's not starting, does that mean like an opener pitches the first inning and then Clevinger is the bulk guy? So, yeah, there could be just a little bit of semantics around the role that he's occupying, and he could be counted upon to take big innings. But they're in a rotation where even like Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz aren't factors, but Burke is holding his own and Jonathan Cannon's fine. This would not be possible, but really seems like they are committed to this reset in Charlotte. And I'm in the process of writing it up. I talked to a lot of people in Charlotte about this reset, including you talking to Cannon and Burke. And there are no real clear objectives to meet. There are no new pitches being worked on or mechanics clean up. It really seems about like executing better. Just, you know, I think they were tired of, you know, or Cannon got hit pretty hard three starts in a row. Burke was avoiding like disaster, but he was only going like three plus innings an outing and, you know, leading to a lot of relief innings. So I think they just saw enough, but I don't know if their profiles right now have any quick fixes or any mechanical tweaks to get them back on track. It really just sounds like you guys need to do what you do, but better.
Well, that is a great lead in to a question that we got on Twitter that I wanted to chat with both of you about, because again, as we enter the final month of the regular season in 2025, it's easy for White Sox fans hoping for three more wins so they could hit the season over, no matter what you possibly bet on before the season, whether you got the over 49.5 or the over 52.5, the White Sox should be able to clear both of those unless they have one of the worst months in recent memory in September, which is not out of the question for the White Sox. But let's be confident here and optimistic that they'll win at least five games this month. But on Twitter, from The Real Scott Thorson, he tweeted to me on Sunday, "Josh, early offseason question, what will the 2026 starting rotation look like?" And he mentioned Smith, Davis Martin, Martin Perez, but again, Martin Perez with a mutual option is not guaranteed to be coming back to the White Sox unless they have some type of different contract, as one of the parties will be opting out so they can get that sweet, sweet opt-out cash. But James, let me pose this question to you. With Jim explaining that there's no real clear objectives right now in Charlotte for Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon, just jotting on paper right now, I got Shane Smith and Davis Martin as probably the most likely guys to carry over from right now going into 2026. I still got Sean Burke. I still got Jonathan Cannon. And I have penciled in Drew Thorpe, depending on how he looks in spring training after his injury.
I think that's too early.
Too early?
Yeah, he's shooting for like the All-Star break. Oh.
All right. So to try to answer the real Scott Thorson's question here, what does the 2026 starting rotation look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think you identified the most likely carryovers with Smith and Martin. I would probably say like split the difference one of Cannon and Burke being there. Like, I think Cannon has probably been the one you've heard them talk a little bit more like expectantly about his long-term future in the rotation, and Burke in turn looks like the one you could probably see popping a little bit more in relief. And just in their current state, it's probably safer to like bet 50-50 on them than say both of them will definitely sure be up. I think they believe enough in their pitching apparatus that at least one, if not two, of the rotation spots would probably be some sort of, and it'd be a degree of what level of buy low, like, but I think some attempt to, you know, upside surprise, as Bannister puts it, like find someone that they believe is undervalued. You know, it'd be great if they paid $10 million to someone who they think is really worth $20 million. But, you know, that was obviously more hoping like $10 million production out of a $5 million contract for Perez, something like this, that this past offseason. So I would say that, you know, maybe you can kind of cobble together an idea that the fifth one is an internal candidate. I think that's, you know, certainly some intention to look at Grant Taylor down the road, but between like how many, you know, the struggles, you know, even if they're, you know, maybe not real in terms of like the actual root causes, but it's he's going to wind up in this like 65 inning bucket maybe, and that seems like a not much to platform like making him start the next year or two, at least not any kind of full-time role. So I can see kind of two outside additions. Maybe that's something if they're active on the trade market this offseason, like maybe a kind of a post-hype starter is someone they're targeting in some way, or even in, so what they do in free agency to some degree. But yeah, I'd probably lean more towards inside additions than like saying, oh, for sure. Like, I think Tanner McDougal will make starts in Chicago next year, but like opening day rotation, that seems like a bit rich. And if only from like, he'd have to be so good he convinced them to like on a service time basis to do that, on top of just like, you know, the jump he would have to make level wise. I would be surprised, you know, obviously Schultz or Smith have the potential to either look dominant in AFL or look dominant spring and kind of force themselves in that conversation, or really do both. Probably Schultz more than Smith because of his, you know, innings base being a little bit higher and, you know, it being pro a little bit longer. But Joe Schultz looks great in the AFL and looks great in spring. Yeah, they probably have to weigh him seriously. And maybe they just like find another mid rotation starter on the Rule 5 again. So I wouldn't really pencil in more than like three guys on the roster right now. I think doing that would be a little too chalk and safe.
What about Mike Vassell?
Yeah, that's another good like internal candidate. They've always seemed kind of a little wishy-washy, especially about doing it now. I thought they were kind of building him up earlier in the year to what he is, but he's big, he's strong, he's throwing lots of innings. He certainly has a mix where more and more, you know, seeing him command his sinker inside the lefties at the end of Sunday, he said that was a big step for him. So I think that's someone in your pool of someone who bounces up, I would consider like a bit more reasonable just in terms of workload than like expecting Taylor to do it. So yeah.
I approached that idea as well, Jim, during the season, just chatting with other fans, like even putting it on Twitter, like, would you try to give Mike Vassell a shot? Maybe that makes sense in the final weeks of the 2025 season. But he had a great moment on Sunday to pick up that save for the White Sox, to get Aaron Judge out, to strike out Cody Bellinger looking He was super excited. He should be. That was a big moment for him and for the White Sox to snap that losing streak and take at least one game from the New York Yankees over the Labor Day weekend. So we'll see what the White Sox do with Mike Vassell. But the real Scott Thorson, thank you for posing this question to us and for everyone listening to this with your offseason plan projects. I think James is right. We all have some work to do. So I can't wait to see in the offseason who are your low to mid-tier starting pitching targets, guys that maybe Brian Bannister can fix. And because we've seen a lot of arms this year and we've seen some big surprises, maybe you can find the next Adrian Hauser for the Chicago White Sox or maybe even Shane Smith.
Maybe it'll be you.
Maybe be you. Start warming up that arm.
Look to your left. Look to your right. One of you will be the fifth starter.
Well, for the White Sox, they now, after their lengthy homestand, they are going on the road to face their American League Central rivals. They start first with a four-game series in Minneapolis to face the Minnesota Twins. The Twins this year are 62-74 on the season. They've been much better at Target Field this year than on the road. The Twins have a winning record at home. They're 35-32. They are 4-6 in their last 10. They did win on Sunday. Your pitching probables for this series is the season series. The Twins are leading it 5-4. It's to be determined for the White Sox. As we just talked about, maybe we'll see Mike Clevinger. We'll see who else they use to try to get nine innings in. But this game starts at 1:10 p.m. Central Time. Bailey Ober is the scheduled starter for the Minnesota Twins. Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, all these games are at 6:40 p.m. Central Time. The dart, Davis Martin takes the ball on Tuesday night against Simeon Woods Richardson of the Twins. On Wednesday, it's Yoenis Gomez for the White Sox, who's been pitching pretty well, against Zebby Matthews. And then on Thursday, Shane Smith, who is excellent in the month of August. He's really bounced back after, I don't know if that was a dead arm period or just an adjustment period, but he looked great against the Yankees. And he had a strong month of August. He'll take the ball for the White Sox, include that series against the Twins, the final game against the Minnesota Twins in 2025, against to be determined for the Twins. So we know that Clevinger, Jim, is joining the Chicago White Sox. What we're going to be waiting on and who else is joining Clevinger as the rosters expand to 28 players in the month of September. If you had to guess, Jim, who else would you be expecting to join the White Sox roster?
Well, I mean, the only candidate on the 40-man roster would be Brian Ramos, but he did play on Sunday in Nashville for Charlotte. Like, you know, I was looking for that going into the game, was, you know, any kind of clues. And so when Clevinger left, like, huh, yeah, that's interesting. That's a tip. But, you know, Ramos played the whole game. He did play the whole game at first base, which was interesting in terms of if they are trying to broaden his skill set and give him more of a both corners type.
How did he look at first?
Fine. Like, you know, he wasn't really tested in any kind of crazy plays. He's just mainly receiving throws. No 3-6-3 attempts or anything like that. So he didn't stand out one way or another. But yeah, he would seem to be the only guy. And he's had like a nice second half or, you know, after the All-Star break for the Knights. Not extremely dynamic, but fits in with what the White Sox currently have with Vargas out. Yeah, I think he just runs into a problem with Curtis Meade being kind of similar, both in terms of skill set and also, you know, Meade is out of options, and that gets in Ramos's way since he will have an option remaining. So it's hard to say him getting a lot of playing time, but, you know, they've already called up Corey Lee, which, you know, looked like the easiest option before he got called up. Like, I was kind of penciling him in for the position player spots. So unless they really go off the board, it's hard to think of who else.
Any guesses for you, James? Anyone that you've been hearing?
I was trying to think of the most boring perfunctory functional option. So I was leaning Fraser Ellard, but his ERA is pretty up there. Yeah,
I have like one position player though. I thought they had you can add two pitchers.
I don't know.
Okay.
Should I know?
This is going to be a great
month. It's a good podcast to look this up.
Yeah.
I'm How many do the White Sox actually have their 40-man roster filled up? I mean, I know they got some pretty significant injuries. Could you put Luis Robert on the 60-day IL now?
I think Clevinger would be the one taking the available roster spot.
No, they're at 38 from the Savali Wilson swap.
Okay.
So it would be 39.
I thought Wilson was shoved off the roster.
The press release says the roster is remains at 38, that it was okay. At 38 and it was a neutral swap. Okay.
But yes, there is a cap on pitchers, 14 pitchers. So only one of the two additions can be pitchers.
Okay.
So it'd be Ramos or going out of your way for something else.
Wow. Exciting. This is where we're at.
I mean, does that mean like you could add Dominic Fletcher?
Yeah.
That seems a little duplicitous with not duplicitous, redundant with you know what they already have. You could bring Jacob Amaya back.
Yeah, it's just, it's not exciting.
This is why I don't know. I haven't delved into this because I didn't think like, ooh, something spicy.
Right. Yeah. They could swap that player out a lot over the course of the month too.
Right, which they did last year, which takes the steam out of like someone coming up in September and
yeah,
like, ooh, we get to watch them for a month. And then,
yeah, I thought about writing a post about the preview and just thinking like, this is probably just going to be a mishmash of patches based on what's needed and who gets hurt.
Right. And then you have like, say Vargas comes back as soon as they're hoping, that like throws the roster back into a shuffle that maybe they do something else again and, you know, kicks Tim Elko back off, or do they keep Elko on, or I don't know.
Does Palacios come back?
Again, like they already have Robertson up here. Like how many left-handed outfielders do you have? Like
all of them.
Was what they had. Like I found myself like seeing Benintendi in the clubhouse post game Sunday. I was like, oh right, he didn't play today. Like because it didn't occur to me that like they can just stack the normal amount of lefty outfielders and fill the DH slot, and like Benintendi's not involved in some way that he wasn't like hidden in some crevice of the lineup, and I didn't notice his at bats. But just like, oh, he did have the day off, so I don't see how they could fit Palacios into that mix as well.
Well, it's not that exciting for a rebuilding team with September call-ups. Because, like, Cincinnati, they're calling up Sal Stewart, their number one prospect. I mean, that's exciting. But the White Sox just don't have anyone right now.
I mean, the White Sox probably like Kyle Teal, Edgar Caro, and Colson Montgomery up and hitting. What more do you cretins want?
We want more! More!
Like we couldn't imagine this in April.
True. Very true. Well, we'll see who the other two players are that join the White Sox in Minneapolis for the final four games of the year against the Twins again on Labor Day on Monday. That's a 1:10 p.m. Central Time start. So a day game. And then Tuesday through Thursday are 6:40 p.m. Central Time starts. Be a late night for us on Thursday night for Sox Machine as we'll record that podcast episode after the Thursday night game and preview the upcoming series against Detroit. A reminder that we'll be having our live podcast of the Remova Theater on Saturday, September 6th. As Courtney Finnecombe of Baseball Isn't Boring will join me, and we'll have a watch party to watch the White Sox and Tigers that Saturday late afternoon. Doors open at 4 p.m. Central Time. First pitch of that game is at 5 p.m. Central Time, and the live show will start at 4:30. Look forward to seeing everyone at the Remova Theater. And then finally, as we do with the Monday podcast, we take a look around Major League Baseball. And I am going to start with this little nugget from Bob Nightingale of USA Today in his Sunday notebook. Bob wrote, MLB executives find it unfathomable that the White Sox will pick up Luis Robert's $20 million option after the season just so they could trade him next summer. Robert, he actually did use Roberts, very Bridgeport of him. Robert is out for the season with a strained hamstring after yet another miserable year. He's missed 289 games the past five seasons. He will have virtually zero trade value this winter at $20 million. So do the White Sox really take the gamble? He can stay healthy long enough next season to trade him and eat most of his salary just to move him. Come on, Bob. Can't you call Tony? Tony could probably tell you what's going on.
Tony might be the one saying it. You never know.
Well, that would be conflict. And the other thing, too, that caught my surprise in Nightingale's Sunday column, I didn't know that Brian Snicker is retiring after the season. Did
apparently
you know that?
Everyone's retiring. I think they've been out there a little, or just speculated on.
I may have missed that. So Atlanta's going to need a new manager. Bruce Bochy doesn't know what he's going to do next year because his contract expires. Rod Washington's contract expires. A lot of managerial openings going to next year. Would Sergio Santos be applying for one of those jobs, Jim?
He could. It's, it'd be the Rangers taking back a bench coach slash coach in their ranks after the White Sox got Will Venable, got their guy who was supposedly waiting in the wings. Turnabout's fair play, all that. Interesting. Yeah, I don't know if it'll be interesting listening to Venable after, you know, if Bochy retires and the Rangers do hire somebody, but it'll at least be worth asking the question to him of, do you wish you hung around, or does it give you second thoughts? Yeah, not that he's going to answer in a way, but just is funny, you know, if it's a case where he didn't want to wait and just went for the job and got it. I guess, you know, they did fire, was Donnie Ecker, their offensive coordinator. Yeah. So, you know, that was another guy who was going for major league managing jobs and, you know, didn't get it. And, you know, how hot and cold they've been this year. Maybe you can't count on keeping your job, or you can't count on being a victim of a shakeup on the coaching staff. So I wouldn't expect him to voice regret or say like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of stuck in this 3-year contract. The White Sox won't let me out of it. Otherwise, I'd be interviewing for that job, if not have it already. But it's still just a you know, one of those sliding doors scenarios where you wonder if I stayed in Texas, would I be the manager of the Rangers now? Are they going back to the postseason? Who knows?
Well, those are the things that caught my attention around Major League Baseball from Nightingale's Sunday column. James, how about you? What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball? How is your fantasy team doing?
Basically the equivalent of we're the AL Central champs, so to speak. Like I think I'm going to enter the playoffs on a 4-game losing streak at 12-10. Nope, pulled ahead.
So nice.
I'll be 13-9. Still the worst team in the playoffs, but still the 2 seed. So hopeful some like crazed waiver wire pickups late season playoff. Bryce Miller, he seems healthy now. Let's do it. You Darvish, there's some magic in that old corn cob pipe hat. That's he's Frosty the Snowman in this metaphor. But Shane Smith turning around was well timed. It was nice to you know, see that, you know, Carlos Rodon's, night in Chicago was also well-timed. I have to admit.
You were cheering from the press box.
The last 2 years, it's been clearly the best team in the league, like scoring the most points, best record, going to the playoffs, like making big addition trades at the deadline, doing all the things, and then just immediately getting wiped out of the playoffs. So I'm doing it the reverse. We backed in the playoffs. I stopped paying attention to the team for like a month at a time. Made no trade at the deadline. Not favored anything. Now I think this is a championship club now. I think I've found the formula. I'm just doing opposite George.
Love it. Well, I'm going to be knocked out in the first round of the Sox Machine postseason. I just cannot figure out how to beat the Lemons this year. 0-3 against the Lemons. So that's the fantasy baseball update for the Sox Machine podcast. Jim, how about you? What's catching your attention around Major League Baseball?
Well, going back to the Rangers, they've won 5 in a row. They are mounting a threat on the bubble of the wild card race, trying to find somebody to slip up in that wild card race. And they keep doing it, even though they keep losing key players. Like Marcus Semien went on the injured list. Corey Seager needed an appendectomy. Nathan Eovaldi was having a great season, lost for the year, and they're somehow getting stronger. Evan Carter's still out, right? So it's a case of like everybody you would think would be at the center of a Rangers renaissance is not there, aside from like DeGrom, who looks great. So I don't know how they're doing it, and it kind of just sums up the American League to me pretty well in that you look at the field and just like nobody is really impressing, and there are a lot of okay teams, and it just seems like you got to figure out which one of these okay teams is going to have everything going at the right time in October. But a very unimpressive field across like the top 6-7 teams, and I don't think there's like a super team, or even like I'd be curious to see what the betting lines are, not because I'm a gambler, but just because like do the people who are professionals at setting the lines or the odds know anything or have a sense of who's better than whom?
Well, we knew that coming into the season that the American League was not like the National League, where you had all the superpowers for the 2025 season were in the National League. I think we knew that coming into the year. But to see Detroit and Toronto leading the way, Jim, as the top two seeds in the American League, Detroit now ahead of the Blue Jays by percentage points to have that home field advantage in the postseason. But I think you have very interesting interdivision matchups if the season were to end today in the American League postseason. Seattle at Houston, and then Boston at New York. Like, those could be really juicy, great television watching, best of three playoff series. So that's the American League, I think, could be more chaotic than the National League, which makes it fun. But yeah, I'm still expecting the World Series winner to come out of the National League.
I have my catching my eye across baseball thing.
Uh-oh. All right. What is
it? Justin Verlander throwing 121 pitches in 5 innings.
He's retiring after the year. YOLO.
Like, that's got to be like the most hideous pitching to like watch, is a 10 strikeout, 5 inning, 121 pitch. Like, these had to be just interminable at bats. I can't imagine.
I mean, what? That's what was his final line for 120
like,
pitches?
I don't think the level of foul balls involved can be like environmentally justified.
He struck out 10. he struck out 10 in 5 innings. 81 strikes. Only 3 hits allowed. Scoreless, 5 scoreless innings on 121 pitches. Why not?
81 strike. This has to be like a
33 foul balls.
30. Jesus, God. 33 step outs, walk out, everyone circle around. Like pre-pitch clock, this would have been a 5-hour game.
What was the time of this game?
3 hours, 12 minutes.
Oh, man.
But it was 13-2 Giants. So, like, they did pile it on Sugano on the other side. But, yeah, it's 33 foul balls. That might be... It's got to be close to the season high, because I think I was looking it up with the Davis Martin starts recently to figure out just how many. I think he gave up 23, and there had been more. But yeah, that's you rarely see more than 30.
Wow. Well, hey, he's in his final year of his illustrious career. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Let him eat, James.
Is he retired? Like, do we know who's retiring, who's not, or who we just know
dude
is retiring,
like,
who's actually said it?
He's retiring.
Okay.
Josh has retired him.
I'm retiring. Just it's time, Justin.
So I put him in like the offseason plan project. That'd be bad.
That'd be hilarious. Why not? Justin Verlander, Chicago White Sox, and then in 5 years we can get a Justin Verlander White Sox bobblehead. Remember when this guy was on the White Sox?
You think they wait that long?
Get no. Verlander, Scherzer, Kyle Hendricks, just get the entire like one last job rotation.
Let's do it. Hey, if they're all willing to sign for $3 million, add one more shot at glory in the major leagues. League minimum.
Says he wants to pitch next year.
He does want to pitch next year?
See? No one knows.
Justin, give it up.
Man. He just struck out 10 guys. He's
421 pitches. I just...
Stay down.
No kidding. I figured if you're going to let him throw that many, you just throwing caution to the wind at this point. Who cares? Let him eat. But no, if he wants to keep pitching. Wow, I can't believe that. Giants baseball, baby. But
now I'm looking up to see the last inning, like how many pitches he threw. Like, did they want to get him a win?
There was a media member who was complaining that Yoenis Gomez didn't get a chance to get a win. Was it the Royals game earlier this week where he
Was that
got pulled for
you?
like, no, it was not me. It's like, I think he's cool with getting starts and getting a chance to like pitch regularly in an actual set role. Like
Yeah.
I don't think he's quite yet a like, you gotta give me a shot for a win level of cachet after, you know, three good starts.
Now, he didn't throw a ton of pitches in the fifth inning. He had a lot of pitches going into the fifth inning.
Got it.
So I think he
Oh.
threw like 22 or something like that, like eyeballing it in the fifth. But that means he went into the inning with nearly 100 on
He
his
had
count.
100 pitches at a four inning. What are we doing here? Well, what? Again, I think he should retire. I'm trying to retire Justin Verlander, so.
So that gets him to 265 wins. I
Well,
don't know
he's
if that
not.
means anything, but still.
He's going to the Hall of Fame. I don't know what we're doing here. Just let the big dog eat, I guess. Let him go 5 innings every game. Maybe it'll be 160 pitches next time. Giving up 60 foul balls. Let him eat. He's done after this year. But speaking of being done, this podcast is over. Thank you so much for listening to the Sox
Justin
Machine
Verlander says,
podcast.
end your podcast now.
If you just discovered the Sox Machine podcast, you can listen to the show and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. And follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at Sox Machine underscore Josh. We're on Instagram. We're on Blue Sky. You can follow us on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, you can sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website and access to our comment section. We just had our first Veterans Committee suite night this past Friday for the White Sox and Yankees game. I had a ton of fun, Jim. So thank you so much for coming up from Nashville and
Thanks for
joining
arranging
us.
it. Thanks for arranging it. It was a great time.
It was a great time. We're going to be doing it again next year. So if you want direct access to Jim and James and you want to pester them with questions about what's going on in the group chat and you want to be invited to special events like our suite night and have monthly Zoom calls with us as well to learn more about what's going on with Sox Machine, we have openings in our Veterans Committee. Again, go to SoxMachine.com and inquire within. The Sox Machine podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com, your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.